thank you so much for agreeing to have this informal interview. I would love to ask a couple questions about the yourself as a person first, and then of course we will jump into the question that I was, or the topic that I proposed, which is the fourth industrial revolution. And to start with, Bishop Williamson, I would love to ask, how were you called by God, if you want to explain the viewers, because I do think that this is something that usually is not you called on, or nobody hears this on your lectures, is how were you called by God, and how did you start your journey as a Catholic?
Okay, the story is told in the biography that Dr. David White wrote about me in the United States a few years ago now. It's called The Voice of the Trumpet. Mm-hmm. And you can get it, I think, from Amazon still. So that tells a story. In brief, I was born and bred of, I can say justly, decent liberal parents in who lived, my father worked in London. We always lived within striking distance of London after the Second World War came to an end. And I had a very good Protestant education, or liberal education, at a top-class English school, Winchester College, from the age of 13 to 18, during which I prided myself, fool that I was, on being an atheist. I said, God doesn't exist, so okay. And I rampaged against God, and I must have made him laugh. Anyway, I called myself an atheist at that time, and an atheist I remained, except that when I began working, I found myself teaching from the age of 25 to 30 at a boys' school, a high-quality boys' school in London, St. Paul's, where the boys between 13 and 18 had to live in, mostly lived in London, in the big city, where they obviously used their elbows coming to school in the morning on the underground, or going home in the evening on the underground. They had to live in the hustle and bustle and rustle of the big bad city. So they were fairly hard-boiled boys. And when I tried to serve them up as a teacher, a teacher of languages, basically, when I tried to serve them up the decent humanism that I received, the classical humanism that I received from Winchester, they picked it up, looked at it, and threw it on the ground. It didn't interest them. They were children of the Beatles, or the Beatles generation, and this classic humanism was not their world. At that point, I had a choice. Mm-hmm. Either I had to lick these boys, or I had to join them. In other words, either I had to join the boys in the sense of agreeing with them that life is dirt, the Beatles are right, strawberry fields forever, nothing's worth, nothing is real, nothing is to get hung about, strawberry fields forever. That's what the Beatles sing, and that was the attitude of these boys. Life is trash, basically. And I was convinced, thanks to this decent humanism, that it wasn't trash. But if I was going to go on teaching, I would have to, if I didn't want to join them by saying that life is trash, then I had to lick them in American, which means I had to beat them. Mm-hmm. Either they were going to beat me, or I was going to beat them. So I decided I was going to beat them. And the great and merciful God had already put me on the track of thinking that the Industrial Revolution, around 1800, let's say, 1750, 1800 in England, was a bad thing because it was against nature and separated men from nature. He had already put me on the track of the Industrial Revolution being a bad thing. But then one day in the beginning of my schooling, school, my 5 years at St. Paul's School, one day the thought came to me, maybe it's the Protestant Revolution. Maybe it's Protestantism that's the problem. And the thought came completely gratuitously. I can remember when and where the thought came into my mind, and nothing put it into my mind. It must have been God. So anyway, the thought interested me, so I began looking at Protestantism, and I began looking at Catholicism, and I began reading books about Catholicism, and I began, that led to visiting Catholic priests. We're now in the mid to late 1960s, visiting Catholic priests, maybe a good 8 to 10 of them, Carmelites, Benedictines, Jesuits, and diocesan priests. And each time I would go visit one of these, and they were very generous. They were all very generous and kind to me. Each time I would visit one of them, I would say, Father, I'm interested in this Catholic religion of yours. What can you tell me about it? I'm not interested in joining. Let's get that clear. But I'm interested in it. So what can you tell me about it? So these priests had this young man, a little bit full of himself, or a lot full of himself, interrogating them about their faith. So every one of the priests, they treated me very decently, and they explained this or that I was interested in, and I picked up from Catholic priests knowledge of the faith. But then, when all was said and done, and this we're now, let's say, in the 1970, and I realized that the teaching in the London school was not going to be my life. I didn't know what was going to be my life, but I knew that I couldn't just go on teaching there. It was leading nowhere, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to friends. I was by now really quite interested in the faith, but fairly determined not to become Catholic. I was not yet convinced. I had my own mind, and I was not yet going to join. But I was seriously interested. But before I left that school, I was telling the boys that the modern world is full of problems, and the Catholic Church is the answer.
So because it was still this bastion of tradition, was it what you felt back then?
Well, that's an interesting question, and the answer is yes, because my reading was leading me to the conclusion some of these priests recommended that I should read St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine. Others recommended that I should read Teilhard de Chardin. So I tried to read Teilhard de Chardin, and I didn't like it. And I also read the documents of Vatican II, and they certainly didn't grab me. I read them. I didn't despise them, because it seemed to be a council of the Church, but they did not grab me. On the other hand, what did grab me big time was St. Thomas Aquinas, the text itself of the Summa Theologiae, which was what one Jesuit recommended me to read. Wow. And he was wise.
And you didn't read the entire Summa?
I didn't read the entire Summa, but I read easily most of, I studied, I didn't just read, I studied easily most of the first part, mm-hmm. and quite a bit of the third part.
That's
the De Uno about God and about Christ. And then the second part is about morals, more or less. God, morals, Christ. So I read a good deal of the first part about God, and I read a good deal about Christ. But I certainly didn't read it all. To study at all was a big undertaking.
And this is exactly.
But I did study what I read. I read carefully. I began reading it in English, but soon began reading it in Latin, because at Winchester I'd learned Latin, and it's much more clear in Latin than it is in English.
Definitely.
English is not a good language for philosophy or theology, nor is German. The Latin languages are the best, simply because they derive from Latin, in which the church theologians and philosophers have mostly written, the classic mm-hmm. theologians anyway. So I left the school in the summer of 1970, and I went up to Scotland with a pile of books to read, but actually I didn't read many of them when I was up there. What I did was I walked in the moors in the Scottish countryside, and I prayed the rosary.
Oh, Our Lady got you.
Yep.
Okay. It's
So then a boy that I'd been teaching in London got in touch with me, and he said, okay, you told us all that Catholicism is the answer, but what should I'm visiting a Catholic priest, and he's making, no, I recommended him to visit a Catholic priest. He said, what should I do now? You recommend Catholicism, but you're not yourself Catholic. What should I do? I said, well, I know of a Catholic priest who's living in the same county as you. Maybe he's not too far away. Actually, it was only about 6 miles away. So my young friend got on a bicycle. He's now a Catholic bishop, by the way.
Wow.
He got on a bicycle and drove rode to see Father Flanagan, Father John Flanagan, an Irish priest.
Mm-hmm.
A bit cantankerous, but very conservative, and laying out the old doctrine in the newspapers against the nonsense of Vatican II, which he was indignant about. So this lad wrote to me about a month later, saying, "Well, Father Flanagan was 6 miles away. I went to see him, and he's told me about the faith, but he's willing to receive me into the church at Christmas. What should I do?" So I wrote back to him saying, by all means accept the good Father Flanagan's offer, because that's the way forward for you. So fine, he invites me down for, I'd intended to spend rather longer in Scotland, this lad invited me down to his reception to the church. So I piled everything into a car and drove south and arrived in time for Christmas. And I knock on the door of the presbytery, and this was Christmas Eve of 1970. And Father Flanagan answers the door. Come in, Williamson, Mr. Williamson. Come in. So I came in, and he sat me down in his study, and there was already this lad sunk in the depths of an armchair and waiting to be received in a few moments. "Ah, now, Mr. Winston, tell me, what do you think of what this young man is doing?" And I'm using an Irish accent because he was an Irish. And it adds colour to the story. Irishmen always add colour, exactly. Or usually anyway, if they're not villains. What do you think of what this man is doing? So I began replying. I said, well, if I think about it and imagine what he's choosing, and given all the circumstances of today and so on, and the situation of the world, I might come to the conclusion that he's doing the right thing. So you think so, Mr. Williamson? Well now, why aren't you a Catholic? Oh, Father, that's going a bit fast. I mean, it's true that I've been reading about it for some time and so on. But I haven't made up. I don't see my way to becoming a Catholic, Mr. Williamson. Come back in 3 weeks' time, and I will receive you into church.
And so he did.
And that's the answer to the question, how I became a Catholic.
All right.
I was standing on the edge of the swimming pool, so looking at the water and imagining how delightful it might be to bathe. But the water might be a bit cold, and I wasn't sure, and I would probably have stood forever on the edge of the swimming pool. But this Irish came up behind me and pushed me into the water. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
It was.
Three days later, I was there, and he was taken into the church. And my father and mother attended the little ceremony. It's not a huge ceremony if you're an Anglican or a baptized Anglican, but it's a ceremony nevertheless. And my dear parents came down to give me my support, I guess. And this lad was also there, and I've been a happy Catholic, honestly, a happy Catholic ever since. I've never regretted it at all, not at all.
Beautiful.
Accepting the Father Flanagan's offer. So that's the answer to your question.
And I guess Our Lady always has her soldiers ready to throw people in the water. The second question would be, it was a pleasure to listen to that story. I never heard it before. I'm going to point out the book to all the fellow listeners out there. And I'm also going to ask then, why did you went to Monsignor Lefebvre with a request?
Another good question. And it's another story. I could talk for an hour, I'm afraid, on all my stories, but you'll have to get to the action soon.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'll take up all the time.
This is the last one. This is the last one, and then we'll
Okay. Well, I put myself under Father Flanagan's guidance once I was ordained to the church. And he said to me, "You should be a priest." I said, "Wait a moment, Father. I've only just coming into the church. Go easy. So he said, all right. Now, what were you doing in the world? So he let me go. For about a year, I visited one after, I kept reading the Summa Theologiae of St. Thomas Aquinas all the time, so that I had quite a familiarity with the Summa by the time I arrived at the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, what was I going to say? I've forgotten. I'm sorry, I'm an old man, and I usually forget, lose thread of what I'm saying.
We were linking the point between becoming a Catholic and searching a traditional priest like Monsignor Lefebvre.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I said, "Slow down, Father." So he said, all right, off you go. I spent a year visiting shrines, especially recent apparitions of Our Lady, because this is interesting, because when I, immediately after I entered the church, I came back to the England with a rucksack full of books about apparitions that I'd picked up at the various shrines that I visited in Europe, notably Garibandel and Fatima. I don't know if you know about Garibandel, but those are great apparitions of Our Lady at the time of the council. The Garibandel was Our Lady's anti-council. The church has chosen to go the way of the council, so the church has chosen to refuse Our Lady of Garibandel. She did say, after all, in 1965, many at the end of the council, as the council was closing, just as the council was just about to close, she said, amongst other things, "Many cardinals, bishops, and priests are on the road to perdition, damnation, and they're taking many souls with them." Of course, the churchmen didn't like that, so they tried to shut it down, and they've been very critical of Garibandel, which has still not had a proper approval from the church, although it's definitely not had the final disapproval. The disapproval has been somehow emptied of force, and the approval, even if the approval has not yet been given. So the church is in uncertain about Garibandel for the moment, but it will learn soon, because the great Garibandel events, the warning, the miracle, and the chastisement are just around the corner. I don't know the exact timetable, but I'm sure that they are not far away. Maybe not for the warning, not more than 2 years away. That's a sheer guess. It's not a dogmatic statement. It's not a truth taught by the church. It's just a guess of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm not the only one to guess, so the warning must be not far off. So the churchmen have refused Garibandel. They've tried to shut down Fatima. Our Lady went to Japan and spoke in Akita in 1973 to repeat her warnings of what's going to happen if men don't change their ways. And men are obviously not changing their ways. We are now being punished with this COVID nonsense. And therefore, the Garibaldi event is going to happen. So, but my becoming a priest in the meantime, what happened was that after a year I'd been traveling and I was a bit footloose and a bit uneasy. It was more than a year, maybe. About a year. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to see Father Flanagan. And he said, "What are you doing, young man?" And I said, "Well, I've been visiting a number of shrines." So there's, I still say you should be a priest. "All right, Father, then what should I do?" So he said, "Well, you go to the local seminary in Warrish and you apply to enter the seminary." Okay. So I went for a selection conference, which lasted a weekend with another maybe 15 lads, my age or younger, a few older maybe. And we met with three examiners, so to speak. One was a priest, one was a layman, and one was a laywoman. And you can guess which of the three asked the question, "Will you be able to endure celibacy?" I nearly fell off my chair when the woman asked that question. So she repeated it. After the conference ended, I went back to Father Flanagan and told him all about it. He was furious.
Of course.
Women were examining whether a lad was suitable for the priesthood. He was furious. He sat down at his typewriter and he pounded out a burning letter to his bishop saying, "What the blank is going on?" And so on. So it was modernism that was already eating away at the seminary.
Exactly.
And Father Flanagan was not a modernist. He had a Catholic faith, a real Catholic faith, and he did his best to defend it with might and main. He was a great man. So he said, "You should still be. You should be a priest. And if you can't keep your big mouth, I'm sorry. You start with the oratory, the London oratory." A priest in the parish nearby, Father Watmore, who must be dead by now, like Father Flanagan is dead by now, Father Watmore suggested the oratory because it had many speeches, the oratorians in the Brompton Oratory, founded by Cardinal Newman. The oratorians had various features which corresponded to my abilities, education, and so on and so on. So I spent a month there and as a postulant, with two other lads. And we were learning scripture out of a semi-modernist commentary. And I said, "Dear doctor," he was a layman, maybe he's a priest, I forget. "Dear doctor, couldn't we study the St. Augustine on the Psalms?" The doctor made no particular comment in reaction, but at the end of the month, when I went to see Father Charles Napier, the superior, with his verdict on whether I should join the oratorians or not, he said, "Well, young man, thank you very much, but no thank you." I think Father Napier realized that he was going to have a handful on his hands. So he also put me out on the pavement, like Wanish, in fact, had done. Like Wanish, in fact, did, because a couple of weeks after the conference, the bishop notified me notified Father Flanagan, yes, very well, but no thanks. And then Father Napier said the same thing. So I went down to Father Flanagan with my tail between my legs, like a whipped dog, two refusals. So did he still really think I should be a priest? He said, if you can't keep your big mouth shut, there's only one place for you, and that's a cold. And note that Father Flanagan didn't agree with Archbishop Lefebvre. Father Flanagan's solution of the great problem of the church in 1972. His problem for the great, his solution to the great post-council problem was the Pope is fine, the problem is the bishops. Whereas the solution of Archbishop Lefebvre obviously was the Pope Paul VI is leading the modernist dance. Mm-hmm. So the Archbishop could not submit to or praise Paul VI in the way that Father Flanagan did. So Father Flanagan did not agree with the Archbishop, but he sent me to his to put myself under his tender care, mm-hmm. which is obviously providence.
Well, I guess because Catholics can identify other Catholics, and
he was the only Catholic seminary at the time. Yes. All the others were more or less infected, mm-hmm. getting more or less infected, more and more infected with modernism. Modernism is a plague. It's an absolute plague. And I had the great advantage of understanding that as a layman before I came anywhere near the church. I mean, I didn't know what modernism was. I didn't know the problem in the church. But I had worked out that the Industrial Revolution was not a good thing and the Protestant Revolution was not a good thing because of the modern world. The modern world I'd run into in London with these boys, for instance. So I knew the problem. I didn't know the solution. And I can remember once I visited a shrine in those years, probably 1965, 66, somewhere around there. I can remember thinking that if ever I was going to join Catholicism, my problems would be answered. My problems with the modern world would be answered. But they would be answered on the church's terms and not on my terms.
Exactly.
In other words, I would be coming to the church with a problem. But like the doctor will say, I'm sorry, your leg has got to be rebroken. It's set badly. It's got to be rebroken, and then we will set it straight. Mm-hmm. It was something like that.
All right.
So I came to the church finally, ready to listen to what it said. And I picked up, between 65 and 70, when Father Flanagan pushed me into the swimming pool, I picked up quite a lot about the Catholic Church.
Great.
I was reading all the time. And the books that made sense to me were the old books, not the newfangled books, not the new Catholicism. Mm-hmm. That
it's
didn't make sense.
And
that was more of the problem and not the solution.
I
was given to see that. I was given to see all of these things.
Mm-hmm. And that's
I was given to see a great deal by God.
Yeah, definitely.
Even before I recognized him, so to speak.
And then we all know the story. You went to Econe.
So then I was at Econe. Mm-hmm. And at Econe, I can remember a journalist coming to see and interviewing me, because Econe was always in the newspapers at that time. And he interviewed me about my conversion and so on. And he said, are you happy now? So I said, well, always up till now, I've been inclined to break the windows, but here in Econe, the windows and I get on very well together.
That's a really nice way to put it. And that's exactly it. That when I was baptized, 2011, I was baptized, of course, within the church, but with modernist priests, and that's the exact feeling. You feel better, but you're still not at home. There's something there, in the air. I don't know what it is, but after a couple years studying and reading theology, and understanding the crisis that's going on, and now we've had 50 years now to experience it.
Well, inside the society. I had a lot of good companions for many years. I was inside the society until, I think, 2013, mm-hmm. when I was thrown out. The Spirit General threw me out, telling everybody that I walked out, or letting everybody think that I walked out, which is not true. I was thrown out. I was, in fact, happy with the society. I was very happy with the Archbishop. He was a great man, a great, great man, a great churchman. And he understood the modern world really pretty well. Perhaps not quite enough. Perhaps not quite enough. Perhaps he was still a bit fooled himself. But the basics he had clear, and that was the classic anti-liberal doctrine over several centuries of the Catholic popes and the Catholic Church. he had understood that at the French Seminary, and he had no truck with Vatican II. He saw through it right from the start. He condemned it at the time, very wisely, prudently, reasonably, without getting angry, without getting upset, and so on and so on. He was a great man. And he started his seminary providentially, and I was led by God to Econe. And I was happy in the society until 2013, when the society was changing course and moving back towards the Romans, the Roman modernists. It's not put itself under the modernists yet, but it's come to a pretty real understanding of agreement with the modernists. Without any piece of paper, an agreement being signed, sealed, and delivered, nevertheless, the agreement is there, and the society is cooperating with the system. The Archbishop of Fevre led the society out of the system, at arm's distance from the system, staying away from the system, which is in world and church, and this COVID nonsense is part of the same system.
And the
society is unable to condemn the COVID nonsense.
This leads us actually to the point that that brought me to ask for an interview here, because I do think that you stress out the problem that Catholics aren't stressing enough. Not even traditional Catholics, modernists, of course, they're not even close to that reality. But you mentioned already something here on this call, and that is the modern world is against nature. And this goes straight into my heart and my mind, because I feel the exact same. And I've heard this lecture you gave a couple of years ago about Ted Kaczynski and the manifest that you wrote, and I don't think that the people there nailed it at that time. You already, of course, you mentioned, and you could exactly separate where the man is right and understands the problem from his actions, which is something totally different. But I don't think people still realize, even in the traditional world, how harmful is the digital world and this digital revolution. So my question about the fourth industrial revolution, this digital madness that we're living in, what is this? For in your experience in life and as a Catholic, what is this all about?
The digital thing is obviously electronic, and it's machines. And I said, you know, the first major thing that I consciously understood on my way towards the Catholic Church was by reading, for instance, somebody like Tolstoy. I read a lot of Tolstoy at the time, because he understood a number of these things. But then he went off the right track before he died. It's a sad case. But there is such a thing as nature, and there is such a thing because it comes from God. Nature is made by God, supernature comes from God, and the two should fit together so that we can live in this world according to nature, which will be according also to supernature, and we will slide up to heaven. If we keep the faith, and if we practice the faith, we will slide up to heaven. But if nature is knocked out of true, then it's like the helicopter of grace trying to land on a marsh. If the helicopter lands on the marsh, the wheels are going to sink into the mud, and the helicopter will never be able to fly away again. So if supernature tries to land on a boy who's soaked in the Beatles and in the Rolling Stones, and those are very out of date, of course. I don't know the latest equivalent of the Beatles or Rolling Stones.
It was bad enough back then, so let's not even consider the ones we have today.
Okay. You know, if these kids suckled on... nothing is real, nothing is get hung about, strawberry fields forever. If that's their philosophy and their food, their mental food, their spiritual food, grace is going to have one devil of a job to try to pick up that nature. Of course, grace grace is from God. God can do as he likes with human beings, but he won't normally interfere with their free will. And by free will, most modern boys and girls are choosing to live in accordance with the modern world. And once they do that, they mess up their nature. They're now being messed up by the adults, the criminal adults, enabling them even to try to change sex, which is incredibly against nature. Mm-hmm. God makes human beings male or female. There aren't 15 different alternatives. Nor did he mean a boy to be a girl, nor did he mean a girl to be a boy. But the wicked and stupid and criminal modern world is now trying to feminize the boys and masculinize the girls, which is criminal, and which mixes up, confuses the poor youngsters, and they don't know whether they're coming or going. They're born a girl and they're trying to be a boy. They're born a boy and they're trying to be a girl. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely anti-nature. And many of these poor children commit suicide. Once they realize what they've done and how absurd it is, they kill themselves. Now, God will have great compassion on such poor youngsters because it is to a great deal not their fault. It's the fault of the criminal adults falsifying this world, refusing God, refusing his nature, refusing common sense, and trying to remake nature, mm-hmm. which they can do with their machines, or which they can do to a certain extent with their machines. The changing of sex for children is done with drugs and surgery. Criminal, absolutely criminal. Criminal stupidity and a wicked betrayal mm-hmm. of the poor youngsters. It's incredible. The devil is doing as he likes in the modern world. He's doing what he likes with people. People, when they turn their back on God, they're turning their back on the way, the truth, and the life, and they are wide open to lies. They make themselves wide open to lies. And the devil is the father of lies, and the devil can do what he likes with modern people because they're so stupid, because they have turned away from God. And therefore, the solution of the whole COVID nonsense, and the only solution of the COVID nonsense, is that people have got to come back to God. They've got to get down on their knees. They've got to ask God forgiveness for their sins. And then they've got to live the rest of their lives as God commands in the Ten Commandments so that they can go to heaven if they die in his grace.
There's something interesting about what you said, and you mentioned this in another lecture, where someone asked, what shall we do? And you were really down to earth. Just grab a rosary, pray. And actually, I have this podcast.
Grabbing a rosary is the most important thing. And it's what Our Lady of Akita says in Japan in 30th October, which is the day of the great Fatima miracle. Obviously, Our Lady was hooking Akita onto Fatima, because the church was going to do its best to silence Fatima.
Yes, and still
in 2000, they would pretend that with a false third message and so on and so on. So the church has gone wrong. They went especially wrong at Vatican II because it betrayed tradition, and that's what Archbishop Lefebvre grasped so mm-hmm. clearly, because he had a strong faith, a strong, simple, and humble faith. He lived by faith, the faith he learned from Father Leflocq at the French seminary. But he was not only, he had the faith, what the French call the faith of a coal worker, la foi d'un charbonnier, but in the Archbishop's case, he was much more than just a coal worker. He was a high-grade intelligence, a humble, but very well formed and learned. He knew canon law, he knew church philosophy, he knew church theology, and he was not fooled by the Théo de Chardin nonsense at Vatican II. So, what should we do? Our Lady doesn't say much of Akita what we should do, but she does say, pray the rosary, is what she says. She says, only I can help you now, she said at Akita. A-K-I-T-A. Mm-hmm. You can find it on the internet.
Yes, yes.
And she says, in the great third message, she said, pray the rosary for the Pope, for bishops, and for priests. The real problem of the poor modern world is inside the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is the light of the world. If the light goes out, the world is in darkness. The Catholic Church is the salt of the earth. Salt stops corruption. And if the salt loses its savor, there's going to be nothing to stop the corruption. And so what we have today throughout the world is darkness, corruption, and the triumph of Satan. And the triumph of Satanists, the wicked, stupid, wicked people running the world today.
Most people that I
see. The digital revolution is simply still more turning to machines. Because man is losing his grip on man. He can't possibly, man cannot possibly understand man unless he has an idea of Almighty God. Because man, every single human soul is individually created by God. Whether it's a Jew or a communist or a Freemason or a Muslim or you name it, any of the enemies of the church, they're all, every single one of them created by, they come from God and they're all meant by him to go to God at the end of their lives. Imagine a kingfisher swooping down, picking up the fish and flying off again. That's what we're meant to do. We are created by God. We swoop down into 30, 60, 90 years of life, and then we're meant to fly off to paradise at the end of it. If we've lived wisely and rightly. If we live unwisely and wrongly, we will never make it to paradise. But paradise is what we are all, without exception, created for. Scripture says God wants all men to be saved. And that's what he created us for. Okay. Man, that's where the dignity of man comes from his high nature, his rational nature, his gift of reason and freedom with reason. His gift of freedom, of free will, is a high gift, and it's the manifestation of the height of his nature as created by God. But that nature is ununderstandable. It's impossible to understand the full dimension of man and his nature and his dignity without bringing in Almighty God. It's because man comes from God that he is spiritual as well as material and that he has free will and he has such high dignity amongst all creatures. If he didn't come from God, he would not have any such dignity because he couldn't have been created. Without God, he couldn't possibly be created without free will. I'm sorry, he couldn't possibly be created with free will. And it's reason and the free will that accompanies reason that gives man his dignity. Therefore, you cannot understand man, the depth of man, the height of man, the possible heights of man, the possible depths of man, if he falls into sin and if he plunges into sin and makes himself a Satanist, like these poor, stupid souls running today's wicked world. They cannot possibly get a handle on what man really is because they refuse God. And since they're not able to get a handle on man, then they turn to machines which they can get a handle on. And they could get a handle on machines and electronics because they themselves made the machines and the electronics. If I make a machine, I understand it because I made it. So men understand machines. So the digital revolution is simply the completion of the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution is man turning to machines because he's turning away from God. Already at the time of the Industrial Revolution, man was turning away from God. And he's been turning away more and more ever since. And that is reaching its climax in the stupidity of this COVID thing, this COVID nonsense. It's criminal nonsense. The evidence of the inoculation. It's not a vaccine. It's an inoculation. The evidence of the inoculation being positively dangerous for human health, positively harmful to human beings, is flooding in all the time as people get inoculated by the million. And a lot of these people now inoculated are in according to several experts, are in serious danger of dying within a few years, because they have allowed to be put into their bloodstream and through their bloodstream into their whole body spike proteins which obstruct the arteries and the veins, for instance. And there are at least three serious dangers that of death coming from the inoculation. It's criminal, absolutely criminal. Nobody should go now anywhere near the inoculation. Absolutely refuse it. Because it's suicide. Yes. It's virtual suicide. There's too much evidence that it's virtual suicide. And the church forbids self-mutilation. I do not have the right to put something into my body which is going to mean my death, my probable death, within a few years. I don't have the right.
They have actually notched things a bit, because with this, with the digital revolution, they are actually making money digital. They're making the way people support billions. Themselves, their livelihood.
They're making billions.
Yes, and
that's one aspect of the criminality. It's for their own purely selfish interests, but it's much worse than that. It's Satan. It's Satanism.
It's
the hatred of human beings, the hatred of life, and the hatred of God that's behind this whole thing.
What I find impressive is that it's actually blocking people from having private things, natural things like private property, and the ability to work for their living. And
it's absolutely anti-natural.
Yes.
It's anti-life.
It is. And the problem is that people are being blocked from entering supermarkets if you don't have this digital ID that they want to implement.
Yes.
And so this makes things even more perverse. It's not even about just turning to
machines.
That's
correct.
It's like...
Correct. It's clear that they have no interest in people's health, because the inoculation is designed to destroy health, ultimately. They want to cripple human beings and finally eliminate them. They want to depopulate the world. They said so. For tens of years, they've been saying that they want to depopulate the world. Bill Gates has said it quite openly. Now he disappeared from circulation, apparently, and maybe because he's scared. He's scared of people lynching him. I don't know. Or maybe somebody's already killed him. I don't know. But he's one of the key criminals, obviously, but he's not the worst.
And they're all openly Satanists, so we all know where this is coming from. And the thing is, I'm not scared, or I'm not bothered that people out there that are not aware of this situation, that, well, they don't know, they are not aware, so they can't. Their guilt is also limited in the eyes of God, from my perspective, for what I think it is the Catholic Church and doctrine. So they're kind of like blinded in a way. But for Catholics, it has been making me think a lot, because some Catholics, I have this podcast, I interview some people, doctors and all, and they ask me, and also politicians about, not politicians, but people that speak about politics, and everybody can see that the world is crumbling. And I hate to hear Catholics asking for solutions, and when someone just tells them, hey, there's no solution, there's no way you'll change things in your country, in the some kind of revolutions. We're tired of revolutions. We've reached this point because of revolutions, exactly. And there's no critical mass to gather people and change something, because people have been abandoning God. So when you tell people to work and pray and raise their families, the answer that I get the most is just that. And it's like the hardest thing you can do. And it's really hard. What could you tell Catholics that want something that it's outside of their grasp, and praying the rosary and raise their families? Well, they think it's not enough.
Yeah, that's right. Our Lady doesn't even mention raising one's family, but she does mention the rosary. She says, "I don't. Do you know the message of Akita?"
Yes. Actually, did a podcast about that message a few weeks ago.
You remember it begins. If men don't mend their ways, there's going to be a chastisement such as has never been seen. Fire will fall from the sky and will eliminate a large part of mankind, the good with the bad, and the priest with the laity. And the survivors will envy the dead. The survivors of this punishment will be envious of the dead because they'll be in such a desolate condition. That's pretty severe. And she says, in that situation, you will have two weapons. Firstly, the rosary, and secondly, the sign left by my son. We don't yet know what that sign is. Normally, it will be the cross, but it might not be. We don't know. Anyway, certainly, she said the rosary. And then she goes on to say, pray the rosary for the Pope, for bishops, and for priests. And that's it. The problem is inside the church. If the church would straighten out, the world wouldn't be in such a mess. But the church, the world, in 1962, the world no longer deserved a straight-thinking and straight-acting church. It deserved a church wrenched off its hinges and adapted to modern man. Modern man is godless. How can you adapt the Church of God to people who are godless? It's not possible without destroying it. And that's what Vatican II is doing. It's destroying the church. It's destroying the church. So pray the rosary is the most important thing of all.
And how can we, as Catholics, we look at the church now, and the church did preach against liberalism, communism, kind of, in a way, not as it should. It mentions...
I'm sorry, what did you say? The church is...
The church did warn against liberalism, and it condemned it. It didn't formally condemn communism, but... it condemned liberalism.
It did condemn communism just before the Second World War, Pius XI. The encyclical Redemptor Hominis, I think it is. No, one moment.
Everyone, I just said it because everyone was expecting that Vatican II would formally condemn communism and Bolshevism and all of these things. And yes, this actually... I think it's all tied together, and it's just a problem that nowadays not only the church doesn't condemn the world, but it also aligns with it, and it's so it's beyond evil that the we've heard this message. I don't like to speak about the Pope. He's the Pope. Nothing we can do about that as a lay person. I can't do anything about it. But there's this feeling of being heard when you hear the vigor of Christ talking about the inoculation, as you mentioned, and forcing it upon people as an act of mercy. This is true evil. This is even on a degree of an evildoer worse than I would say Bill Gates.
When the church promotes COVID, when the church promotes the inoculation, it's the worst of it. It's the worst of all. The church bears a huge responsibility. Even today, the Pope and the bishops still have huge influence. Even if they've wrecked their influence by telling Satan's lies. They should have lost all influence, but they still haven't lost all influence. Still, people listen to the Pope. Such is the prestige of the papacy. But the Pope and the bishops and the priests are off track. Much too much off track. They're not all completely off track, but far too many of them are far too much off track, far too far off track. And so the church, when the church encourages the lies of Satan, it's unbelievable. Just unbelievable. How can it be that God allows a pope to destroy the church? Some people answer, well, he isn't the pope. Maybe the answer, but I don't think so.
Well, I can fully understand.
Personally, I can fully understand people who think that he's not the Pope because he's such a bad Pope. He's one action after another, almost one a day, is designed to destroy the church, to destroy the true church. And a classic recent example is, of course, the document on the Mass. What is it? Traditionis Custodes,
yes.
that motu proprio, which attempts to stifle and strangle and choke off the celebration of the true Mass. But the church depends upon the true mass. The world depends upon the true mass. Okay. Padre Pio said, the world can more easily exist without the light of the sun than without the mass. And Satan brought in this new rite of mass, which is absolutely not worthy of what our Lord, of the sacrifice of our Lord. It can still be valid, but it's absolutely unworthy. Whereas the true mass is the carrier of truth and sanctity and wisdom and morality for centuries and centuries, the true Latin mass. But no, the modern world has to do better, so it tries to wreck the true mass in order to establish the false mass.
Isn't that document null and void?
Pope Francis and a lot of churchmen. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Isn't that document, Traditionis Custodes, only applicable to Summorum Pontificum and the Indult? It seems to me that it's kind of like a null and document in a way, because Pope Pius V made the traditional mass in a way that it could not be revoked. So what is that document trying to revoke? It's just all the other modernist nonsense, right?
Right.
But finally, we have the idea that there's only one rite and that the other new mass, it's a different thing. So at least Francis, in that sense, is the most honest pope we've had since the council.
Yes, he is the most blatant and the most open and in a certain sense the most honest, the most true to Vatican II, yes. In a certain sense, in a certain way. But of course, by being true to Vatican II, he's being true to a pack of lies.
Well, exactly.
And therefore he's a very bad pope and not a good pope by being true to Vatican II. He couldn't be a good pope by being true to Vatican II.
This is a
way. A good pope could only condemn Vatican II.
Of course. Although we see a lot of people, at least youngsters here in Portugal, this situation now, both these / pandemic, or if we believe in that, and also the crisis in the church promoted by Francis, because he's truly adopting and implementing the reforms of the council, this has brought many people to tradition. And in a way, it feels like God does live. God does speak to people, and mentalities are indeed changing. Can this be a sign? Is this something? Is it a false sign?
It's true. I think that today there are certain reactions against the falsehood of Vatican II. It's true that some Catholics are waking up. Yes. But on the other hand, at the same time, a lot of Catholics are still asleep. A lot of Catholics have lost the faith.
True.
And on the internet, Our Lady is quoted as saying that a lot more Catholics are going to lose the faith when the events begin to roll in maybe a few months, at the most a few years. I don't know if this particular apparition is authentic or not. I honestly don't know. But it's there. It's quoted. She is quoted as saying many more Catholics are going to lose the faith. And that's very possible because their faith has been undermined by Vatican II, however, and by the modern world. However, it's true there are some people waking up. And with these souls waking up, Almighty God will be able to reconstruct the church after the chastisement.
Let's hope so. Dear Bishop, we already have 1 hour in. I don't want to take much of your time. 1 hour on the phone, it can be quite exhausting. Yep. I would like to thank you a lot for giving me the opportunity to have this conversation, and especially everyone listening out there.
Do you know my email address?
Yes, I do, sir. I will send it to you as soon as
yes, of course you do, because our first contact was by email. Please send me your name and address and telephone number and postal address. What part of... Are you in Lisbon or are you in some other part of Portugal?
Actually, I'm in Fátima now, but I live close to Lisbon, yes. So I'll send you all my details.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I hope that this was good for all the listeners out there, because we have Bishop Williamson here truly stating that there's a problem with the digital world. It's not only the world out there. It's not only the crisis in the church. Our participation with this digital madness is always adds up. Although we are trapped in this, it's always another sign that there's a problem with the way that we are living. And definitely we need to consider this as a kind of like of a net of sin or a situation of sin, global network of sin that we are also helping and feeding in a way. Dear Bishop, thank you so much. Would you like to say anything else to everyone out there listening?
Dear friends, dear Catholics and non-Catholics listening, pick up your rosary or get hold of a rosary, non-Catholics. Learn how to pray it and pray the rosary for the world and the church. At Akita, Our Lady said, "Only I can help you now." This was 1973. She said, "Only I can help you now." And it's obvious that today, the newspapers, the politicians can't help, the law can't help, the medicine can't help, the media can't help. It's all shot. Padre Pio died in 1968. And before dying, obviously, he said, pray, everything else is shot. Now, I don't think that was his language, but that was his meaning. Everything else is kaput, finished, over, useless, a shell game. These human beings who have turned their backs on God are empty of God, empty of life, empty of meaning, empty of truth. They're lost and gone, finished. Don't bother with them. If you want to do something really useful for your family, for your country, for your church, for your friends, for yourself, pray the rosary and then Our Lady will pick you up. Promised. Promised. Guarantee she will. And pray for the Pope, for the bishops, for Catholic bishops, the Catholic Pope, the Catholic bishops, and Catholic priests in particular. There you will do something really useful. Prayer cannot be wasted. True prayer from the heart, going to God, through the Mother of God, cannot go wasted. And you will do something really genuinely useful, as opposed to a number of things which are useless in today's situation. It's too far gone. It's hopeless. Humanly, the situation is hopeless. It's only Our Lady who can help us out.